Parshas Balak 5:57-74 Tavshin Ayin Dalet. So it's the pasuk in Parak Chavpe is pasuk Zayin. It says Vayechu Ziknei Moav Ziknei Midian Uksam Biadom Biavuol. The one they got really loved every Balak. So it says the elders of Moav and the elders of Midian, they went to go see Bilam, and they had magics in their hands, and they came to Bilam, and they spoke to him the words of Balak, saying that he should come to him to go curse Bnei Israel. Now Rashi tells us that what they brought over here was all different types of magic, so Bilam wouldn't be able to say that he doesn't have his equipment with him. So that's the first explanation of Rashi, where he says that these were specifically referring to different types of magics, these types of oracles, or things that he would be able to use in order to make his curses work. Another explanation he gives is that they used a test to see how effective Bilam would be. If he comes immediately, then he has something to him. If he pushes us off, though, and he says he can't do it right now, then he's not worth it. That's why the Ziknei Midian left immediately when Bilam said to stay overnight. When Bilam said that you have to stay overnight, so that he could ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they realized there's nothing to him. Since he pushed us off, there's no way to be able to understand, there's no way that he's going to be able to curse out Bnei Yisrael. It's not going to happen. The wording in Rashi is very particular, saying that there's no time, there's no anything. It seems like it's not worth it. There's a lot of pirushim on what that means, but we're not going to concentrate on that this year. We've done that in the past. Now, the Sifter Chaim explains why you need both explanations in Rashi. The second shot doesn't explain why it's written in plural, ksamim. That would be good if it was just the word kesem in Lashon Yechidus, but in plural kesamim, that doesn't make any sense. They only had one test, one, so to speak, magical test that they were able to figure out what Bilam was doing. The first shot is strange because Bilam was at home. Why wouldn't he have everything he needs right there? If they were going to Bilam, you'd think that he couldn't give the excuse, I don't have my stuff on me. He was at home. Anyway, he wasn't planning on doing magic. He was planning on cursing them. So even if he was planning on doing some type of magic, I mean, that's not what they called him for. So why would they need kesamim biadam in order to show him? Now, either way, it certainly sounds like Bilam was a magician of some sort, and that's what the Ravina B'chaya takes from over here, that Bilam was a real magician, that he was machashis. But there are three ways of really looking at this. The Ibn Ezra says later in Pasuk Chavchas that he knew the mazalos, the constellations, very well, and through his ability to look at the stars, he was able to figure out what would happen when. But he wasn't a real magician, he was just a faker who knew certain things. And Yoshua Yud Gimel, when it mentions his death, it might say Hakosem after his name, that Bilam Hakosem, but it's possible that that was what he was known as. But he wasn't an actual magician. They just thought he was a magician because he was able to figure out when things were supposed to happen. The Ramban in Pasuk Lamed Aleph says it must have been that he wasn't a Navi, right? It couldn't have been that he was a Navi. Rather, he was a master magician and therefore was into magic his whole life. From looking at these psukim, it's clear that Ksamim Biyadim and everything else that he did, that he was never a Navi except for this one moment, but the rest of his life he was a regular magician, and that's that. The Malbim says, and this is our third way of looking at it, that he used to be a magician. He became a Navi for a very short period of time, including this time, and later reverted back to a magician with no prophesying abilities. So the Ramban said he never really was a Navi. The Malbim says he was a Navi for a short period of time and later reverted back to a magician. And the Ibn Ezra says that all he was not even a real magician. He just knew the mazalos. Now, there's a Tiferes Yonis from Rabbi Yonasan Haipshitz that says that he had actually done tshuva from his use of magics. All these magics he had learned by Shamchaz and Ezol, not something we spoke about at a different time, but he had done tshuva. Now, what does that mean exactly? So he says the following. There's a Gemara that says that Reish Lakish wouldn't talk with just anyone. He would only talk with big tzaddikim that he would lend money to without worrying about certain edim being there. Now, was he such a balgaiva that he wouldn't speak to anybody? He would only speak to certain people? No, it can't be. His Rebbe was Rabbi Yochanan, who said hello before anyone could say hello to him. He's the first person to say hello, even to a non-Jew. So it can't be the Reish Lakish held that way. Rabbi Yochanan held the opposite. So he answers that we know that the best derech for a person is the middle road, as the Rambam says in Hilchos Deos. But sometimes you have to go to extremes. If you did a sin, then you need to go in the opposite direction to do tshuva. Go in the extreme opposite direction to do tshuva. Make for yourself a kiddurim to make sure that that doesn't happen again. So we all know where Reish Lakish was. Reish Lakish, before he became this big Talmud Chacham learning by Rabbi Yochanan, was a thief and therefore wouldn't speak to anyone who didn't have a stellar reputation. Why? Because he went to the extreme so he wouldn't revert back to his old ways. Everyone else was able to speak to whomever they wanted, whenever they wanted. Rabbi Yochanan could do that, but Reish Lakish could not. So Rabbi Yonasan actually says that's the same thing over here. Bilam at one point was a famous magician, but when he saw the level that Balak was on, he realized he wasn't as great as he thought he was. He thus wanted to do tshuva. Listen to this, Rabbi Yonasan says. So he could become even greater by becoming a type of prophet. So he would be even greater than Balak. He wanted to do tshuva not for the right reasons, but in order to be shalolish in Shemayim, to become an even greater person. In order to do so, he needed to have gedarim and siyagin, fences and things there, so he wouldn't be able to walk with the other magicians, like Reish Lakish wasn't able to talk to normal people. So Bilam therefore said no to those chachamim, Nizikne Midian and Nizikne Moav, who came to him with different magics. He couldn't go with them. That would be against his tshuva, which means that he wouldn't be as great as Balak. Okay, now we get to reverse. Reverse tells us that the word kesem and gezem, as in guzma, as in an exaggeration, are very similar to one another. And therefore, kesem means making an effect that goes beyond what is natural or possible. Again, gezem is to, obviously, exaggerating more than what is normal. Right? So to over here, kesem means causing an effect that goes beyond whatever is natural or possible. It also refers to a bit of a sham. It's just exaggeration, nothing more than that when you do magic. In this case, kesem seems to refer not to just a certain result, but predicting the future and knowing what will be. They were asking Bilam to see what would be the best route for them to take. The reason they brought their own magics, he says, is possible because when you went to an oracle of this sort, you had to donate some of your own possessions for this purpose, and that's what they were giving over to him, trying to say, look, we have things for you, now do your magics and tell us when the best time is. To which, obviously, answered, I have to ask a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's the first shot from Reversh, saying that kesem is similar to the word gezem. The Ibn Ezra says he sent actual magicians, others of the trade, that would know the proper time to curse and when to do so. So if he would say that this isn't a good time or a month, etc., they could tell him everything that they themselves knew. Meaning the people of the trade were able to say, this is what we know, this is what we just did. So he specifically sent others magician of that trade. The Gurariya says the exact same thing. The Maral says they already knew the perfect time to curse them. And if Bilam agrees to come right now, then it's all going to work out. But if not, there's no point to us being here, and they would leave immediately. So the Gurariya says that a little bit different than Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra seems to say that they wanted to know when was the proper time to do so, and that's what they're asking Bilam. Well, according to the Gurariya, the Maral, they already knew it was a good time right now, but if he doesn't come right now, said the Zikne Midyan, then it's not worth it, and they left when he said no. Now, why? Rabbi Yonis and Eichshitz, the Chassam Sofer, and the Megali Amukos, obviously the Megali Amukos who came before them, all say that this is right before Rosh Hashanah. And seemingly, they wanted this to happen before Rosh Hashanah, which is why Bilam hurried out the next morning. He had to be slowed down by the Malach and the donkey. And that, therefore, all of the brachos, the klalos, so to speak, that Bilam was trying to give to Klal Yisrael were taking place during the Aseret Yemei Teshuvah. The word Ara, as in cursing, stands for Aleph Rosh Hashanah, the first day of Rosh Hashanah. That's the idea, that they wanted to make sure that all this would happen before Rosh Hashanah had come along. Says the Gurariya, that's what they had messed up on. Now, let's go to the next direction over here. Targum Yonasan, Rav Yonasan ben Uziel, says that they had notebooks, that the Ksumin were notebooks filled with different magical spells and things of that sort, so he could look up things to do if he needed to. That if he had a problem, what was I going to do in that situation? He would be able to do this. He'd have things to be able to do. The Das Zakeno understands it a bit differently. Seemingly, he says that it refers to the money they were going to pay him for doing his work, showing him how much they would pay him up front. So Ksumin Biyadam, according to Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, was notebooks filled with magical spells, while Das Zakeno says it's referring to the money that they were going to pay him for the kesem that he was going to do. The Amloi says this is all a bit of a trick. Would he know what they had and what they were doing, or would they need to tell him? They just sat before him, holding their kesem right in front of him, daring him to figure out what they had, why they had come and what they had wanted. He says, and the Shach says, that this is what you do by anybody. When you go to a Navi or somebody like that, you don't tell him anything. You sit down and you say, well, you should know. And I've seen jokes about stuff like that, where there's a person that's sitting in the room, and she's the all-knowing, I don't know, whatever it is, right? And a person goes in and says, well, you know why I came, otherwise you're a sham. That's what it was by Bilam, that the people said they brought in these summon, and they wanted Bilam to figure out what they wanted. The Shach says each one of them carried a different magical object. Bilam had no idea what they wanted. He couldn't figure it out and was silent. So the Zikne Midyan immediately left and said, forget it, there's nothing we can do.
But the Zikne Moav were on a mission from Balak to come and to tell Bilam to come to curse Klal Yisrael. They had to reply, even though they knew that he wasn't going to help, and even though they knew that his magics were not going to defeat Klal Yisrael, but they had to tell him what they were told to say. So they stayed, and they told him, and everything was there. But the Zikne Midian weren't on a mission from Balak. They didn't have to stay. Then it seems as the Zikne Midian needed these magics for themselves to see if he would be successful after he gave them his answer. Meaning, when they saw through their magics that he wouldn't be successful after he said, I can't go because the Kodesh Baruch Hu won't let me, they left. And only the Zikne Moav remained. So the Netziv says that they were using it to see what would be. And this is similar to what Rashi says earlier, that they're really testing Bilam. A little bit different, but it seems very similar to it. The Sefer Ksav the HaKabbalah says they assumed that Bilam would come with them immediately. So they brought idols with them, since their minhag was to be malada, their great men, with idols on their way in, and other things that they were traveling. In the end, Bilam didn't come, so they went back home thinking that Bilam wasn't going to come again. The second time around, they didn't bring any idols because they said, listen, if he didn't come the first time, who says he's going to come the second time? They didn't bother with coming that second time, bringing stuff with them. But that's the Ksav HaKabbalah, they'll come with it. Now, personally, I always thought it referred to something much simpler. They brought magics and other things with them to force Bilam into coming with them if he refused to come otherwise. I mean, if he said no, they had something to be able to force him to say to him, no, you have to come now. When they saw that he was clearly willing to go, and even wanted to, but felt like he couldn't because he knew it wouldn't work, and because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wasn't with it, they didn't use the magical chains that they had. They went back to Balak to report that it wasn't happening. There was no need to drag him over, that it wasn't going to work. Now, Balak disagreed. He sent different officers, thinking that Bilam was insulted by the use of force, and instead offered honor in the form of its highest-ranking officers, and that was the difference between what he was doing before and what he's doing now. So the fact is, I've never seen that anywhere, but it sounds correct that everything was there, again, to force him the first time along. When they saw that he wasn't going to come because he knew it wasn't going to be successful, they didn't force him. Balak thought that it was a different idea altogether and thought that it was an issue of kavod, so sent his high-ranking officers to give him honor instead. And although I've never seen, okay, whatever it is, Ben Ishai, in the Sefer Od Yosef Chai, says the only reason why they needed these magics was to get by Bilam's guard, who was always at the door keeping people out. That's the reason why they needed these magics, because Bilam's guard was standing at the door making sure that nobody else would be able to come in. A man this powerful, who was known to have cursed Moab, that Sihon could take over the land, surely had many enemies. And in order to allow them in, they had to use a form of force. It could be that they showed the guard that they weren't ordinary people coming to do something improper or to bother his master, whether they were important people in the same line of work of the magic business, so Bilam wouldn't push them off or not see. So either they forced themselves in, or they showed Bilam's guard that they were the right people to go see Bilam, and he didn't push them off. Either way, the guard let them right in. They had an immediate meeting with Bilam. Therefore, they held the magic to be yelled on out in the open so the guard would see it, so to speak, as if they have their guns out, ready to go in, so they can show Bilam they're ready to go. Another answer that he gives is that they knew Bilam's power. Bilam's power was in his mouth, while Balak's power was in his hands, meaning Bilam's power was only in his mouth. Balak's power was in his hands, as he was actually a master magician, was unable to use his magics against the Jews, because in the war of Sihon, the sun was stood up in the middle of the sky. Rabbi Yonah Maimonides says, whenever the sun is stood up, that means that the regular constellations don't work. So that's the reason why. Bilam in the mouth, Balak in his hands. Bilam would see this and know that even though he wouldn't be able to curse him on his own, and Balak wouldn't be able to do magic on his own, nonetheless, the combination of both of them may be powerful enough to do something. And that is, in fact, what happened. The Chidah says that Balak used his magic to scatter the just enough so that parts of Bnei Yisrael could be seen, so that Bilam would then be able to curse them. And that would end up happening, that Bilam was going to be able to curse them when Balak moved those Anani HaKavod. So that's another answer given by the Ben Ish Chai to combine with both of them. Now, there's a famous story with the Gra, where people came to him and told him that there was a guy who was doing magical things, and the Gra asked him, the people who came to him, and said, was the man holding something at the time? When he was told that he was, he said, all of his power comes from what he is holding. Take that away and he'll have no power whatsoever. The people were Mishnomi, they said, how do you know, Rebbe? How do you know that all of his power comes from the thing that he's holding? He said, I learned it from this Parsha. The magicians had these magics biyadam in their hands when trying to show how great they were, because they need to have something for the magic to apply through in order to be able to apply it on something else. They can't just do it with their regular hands, and that's the difference between a great Talmud Chacham and any of these Kosmin. The Kosmin needs something to do so well. We do not. Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein says there's a story about Rabbi Kiva Eger in 1831. There was a plague that hit Posen, and the people asked him for pamiyos, amulets, that they would be able to put around their neck, which he never admitted to knowing, because Rabbi Kiva Eger never told anyone that he knew Kabbalah.
Either way, they asked him, and they said, please, Rebbe, please, people are dying. He finally gave in and wrote them up, gave them to the people, and promised them, made them promise that they would never open it up and look at what's inside. It worked. Every person, the Jews, were unaffected by this plague, and eventually the plague died out. Now, he wouldn't make them after that, saying it wasn't the right thing to do, and he never made kmios any time after that point, but it did work at that one time that he made it. One person couldn't hold himself back. He knew that he was told by Rebbe Kiviger not to open it up, but he couldn't help it. He had to open it up. He had to see what's inside. So he opened it up. Wanted to see what's written inside there. He opened it and found Tosos. Sukkah daf yud beis divar maskol b'psolas gorin b'yekev. Rabbi Kiviger held that the greatest refuah was Torah, and that that's all you need in order to heal a person. You don't need these special shemos and HaKadosh Baruch or anything. Rather, all you need is Torah, and that Tosos was enough to be able to get them. Of course, there probably was a Kabbalistic reason why he gave that specific Tosos on Sukkah yud beis divar maskol b'psolas, but nonetheless, that's the idea, says Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein, that the magics that we have are based on Torah and what we learn, and that has the ability to do things that other magicians or coastmen or wherever they are don't have the ability to do. Have a good Shabbos.